Coming up on today's show, it's all about 40 kilometers an hour. The EFCL recently put forward a motion suggesting that all neighborhoods in Edmonton should have a 40 kilometer an hour speed limit. Joining me today, it's Jason Bale, who really doesn't think so. And let's see if I can convince him by the end of the episode. All that and more on today's...
Let's go visit the Talus Dome. Edmonton is where we call home. Troy lives in Hazeldean. The street is lined with very old trees, very old.
Welcome back to the Basket of Yeggs podcast. I'm here with a familiar face if you followed the Ward 12 campaign. He campaigned on a unique platform of only spending $100 and didn't put up signs, told people to write in the snow, to which it melted. So that didn't end up well for him, but he's still keeping his head high and he's still passionate about municipal politics. And he's here to talk to me about speeding. The EFCL, the Edmonton Federation of Community Leagues, recently put forward a motion to reduce the speed limits in all neighborhoods in Edmonton to 40 kilometers an hour, and even more so, the province. And my guest here, Jason Bale, he's had some opinions about it, and we're here to talk about that today. How are you doing today, Jason?
I'm good, thanks, Troy. How are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to talk about speed limits. Now, I should mention, I am the director of civics for the Hazeldean Community League, and everything I'm saying here is as a private citizen and does not represent Hazeldean officially, so we'll get that out of the way. And Jason, tell me your thoughts about this motion put forward.
So this was one of the first things I discovered when I was trying to kind of write my platform for what I was going to run on, and I looked into why they were doing it, and the number one reason is for safety. And I just think that for the amount of money that we're spending, we can get much more public safety per dollar by reallocating that money somewhere else.
So you're talking about not increasing the speed limit, just to be clear.
Correct.
So let's go over that argument just a little bit. The costs of doing this, we look back at the pilot that was done in, I believe, 2010 was when the six neighborhoods went ahead and did speed limits, three of which kept them. And it was a cost of $500,000 to the city to put up these 40 kilometer an hour signs in these neighborhoods. And there's roughly 160, 180 neighborhoods in Edmonton. So the ballpark number that's been thrown around is 12 to 5 million just for putting up these 40 kilometer an hour signs. And that's the primary object of your opposition to here. It's the cost of doing this, or is the actual speed limit itself something that you draw a problem with?
So what it is looking at the amount of incidents per year. So the number of severe incidents varies from neighborhood to neighborhood for anywhere between 0 and 4 annually, approximately. I think back in 2008 or so, one neighborhood had 10 severe incidents. And those aren't deaths. Those are just incidents where serious injury occurred. So we're looking at about $12 million or so to reduce the severity of incidents rather than looking at trying to reduce the amount of incidents, period. So just reducing the speed, it does drastically increase the survival rate by for every 10 kilometers, just massively, so that when we get down to 30 kilometers an hour, it's like a 5% fatality rate, whereas opposed to at 50, it's about 90. But I don't think that the problem is how severe the accidents are. I think it's more that we need to try and reduce those incidents altogether. It's people texting on their phones. It's people not looking between cars for kids that are playing.
So a lot of the argument there is that this isn't what we should be targeting. And I find I tend to disagree with that, because a lot of the arguments against this is that people already don't follow the speed limit. Reducing this is just going to increase the photo radar cash bag, which I don't tend to disagree with. That's a reasonable assertion that we're all on the same page with. The one that I do sort of disagree with is, if we set the expectation that 50 is an acceptable speed limit, then people will, by nature, be going 50-ish. That's, if we tell them that's acceptable, then going 50 is acceptable. And the idea with reducing the speed limit is we can set the expectation of drivers in our neighborhoods that this is supposed to be slower. Whether it's 40, whether it's 45, whether it's 30, whether it's 8 or 9, as Stephen Mandel famously said in this debate in 2010, I don't really care about that. The primary thing that I support in this motion is that it's different than the rest of the roads. You're on White Ave, you're going faster than you're in a neighborhood, and that makes sense to me. And I'd like to hear your thoughts on that specific issue, like the difference between roads.
Using that example, White Ave has a lot more foot traffic, so it's more likely that there's going to be a pedestrian that might run out into the street or someone walking their dog, someone on a bike, than it is in your everyday neighborhood. So the opportunity for incident is much higher, but people are more aware because they know that that there's cars going by at those speeds.
Okay, so we're saying that on White Ave, you have a higher expectation of a pedestrian fatality, which, sure, by a numbers game, that's true. The idea sort of is that White Ave is different, and 82nd Street is different, and 75th Street is different than a neighborhood. The idea is with neighborhoods, these are where residents actually live and play. People are playing street hockey on these streets. There are cats that are free roaming. Whether or not you agree with that, whatever, it happens. And the idea is that these neighborhoods should be slowed down, in my view. When you present the argument that it's reducing the number of incidents overall, sure, that's true, that's low-hanging fruit, but that doesn't mean I don't want to see the incidents reduced in my neighborhood as well. And 40 kilometers an hour, that's a method of getting there. Wouldn't you agree with that?
I agree that it should be slower. I don't think that just putting up signs is going to do that. Some of the data from the city of Edmonton is that before the trial run, only I think it was 85% or so of residents were aware of the speed limits in their neighborhood. Whereas post, afterwards they were, 98% aware of what the speed limits were. However, compliance went from 62% down to 36%. So more people are aware, but less people are complying with it.
And you're right about that. And that's the common argument that I brought up earlier, is that people may not go the speed limit. And that sort of jives with the rest of our city policy, which is that we issue 800,000 photo radar or 400,000 photo radar tickets to an 800,000 population every year. So there's a lot of tickets being issued, and compliance is generally very low with the speed limits in Edmonton. And I got into discussion about this the other day, and what I sort of posited was that this was a generational problem, because I'm young, I'm 22 at this point, and I've grown up only hearing about people complaining about getting photo radar tickets for going 15 over on the yellowhead. It's been the way of my life that you speed, you get a photo radar ticket, so I don't speed. And now I'm not sure if my situation applies to other people, but anecdotally, yeah, I've heard that people generally, who have grown up with this photo radar system, with this lower speed, higher enforcement system, they don't speed as much. So what I would posit the greatest advantage of this 40 kilometer an hour change is not that it will actually, and let's be fair, in the pilot neighborhoods, it did materially reduce speeds about 2 to 3 kilometers an hour, depending on which neighborhood. But that's not my primary goal with here. My primary goal is that it sets the expectation that speeds are lower, and that maybe in a generation, speeds will become lower because of people's changing perspectives. Now, to that end, if that's the goal that I want to put forward, that this changes expectations, the EFCL, one of their proposals is that we'd make this a provincial change so that we don't have to spend that 12, 15 million on signs, because provincially mandated neighborhoods are 40 kilometers an hour. Now, if that was the case where it's a provincial change in the law to make speed limits 40 kilometers an hour, would you support that?
Yeah, I would be more in support of that, because that's going to cost us drastically less. So the safety per dollar value, we get much more value out of how much we're actually spending. Because I agree that every life is important, and I don't want people spending time in hospitals, not working, or, you know, kids getting hurt. That's got to be the worst of it. But I just think that there's better ways to do it than changing over all the signs.
Let's talk about some of those other ways, because at this point, this is just a motion, so anything's on the table at this point. What are some other ways that we could reduce speeds in neighborhoods that you'd sort of support?
So one of the things that I'd like to see, and it sounds really far-fetched, and I haven't really put too much thought into it, but a kind of a guideline, is that every time you renew your license, I would like to see people retaking their driver's test, even if you do a written one time when you renew, and then the next time you renew, you do a practical, and then the next time you renew, you do a written. Because, I mean, for me, like, I'm 31, I got my license when I was 17, so I knew how to drive 14 years ago. That doesn't necessarily mean that, like, I've had no reason to keep up with...
Well, I think a good example is 2 years ago, Edmonton installed bike boxes at a few intersections. And I mean, as a driver, that wasn't in my handbook, what to do with a bike box.
Exactly.
And that's stuff that could be included in a...
Exactly. It forces drivers to keep up with the changing laws. And I mean, like I don't drink and drive. I know that now it's 0.05 rather than, I think it was 0.07 when I started.
0.08,
yeah. So there was no real reason for me to gain that knowledge. You know, I did it because I do like to keep up with traffic laws. But I know that there are people that just, they get their license and that's it. Plus there's horror stories. I have no source on the validity of it, but people claim that they can just go into a DMV that their brother works at and then they just get their license. And
I mean, anecdotally, when I was getting my driver's license, people suggested, hey, head on over to like a small town and take your test there because they don't have traffic lights there. Much easier to pass your exam. So there is a bit of that gaming the system. You're correct. Yeah.
I would rather look at things like that too. Like, first of all, is that actually happening? Because like I said, I have no credible source of the information. But again, like, what's going to happen in another 20 years from now? I'm going to be, 3 decades of driving with no reason to keep up with those changes.
Yeah. And a lot of it is because our driver's registration system, it's privatized. It's private companies issuing all these examinations, obviously living up to certain standards and auditing by the provincial government. Do you think we should be taking this in-house? Like, should the government itself be issuing these driver's examinations and registrations?
Yeah, see, I'd like to see a lot of projects taken over by government, mainly because the buying power in bulk that we can get would be much better, so we could actually save money on these projects to the individual citizens by taking over it publicly.
So, okay. And the obvious problems with some of this is there's the cost. I've heard every 5 years as a different suggestion for this, which, yeah, I'd think every 5 years retaking a written test is probably reasonable. And that reduces the cost slightly of administering it versus every year. But even with a retaking of the test every 5 years, we have to have a lot more capacity in our system. And not to be undersold, the time and the political implications of doing something like that, drivers wouldn't be happy about that, I speak probably. That's my general inclination. Short of doing that, are there any other ideas that you sort of have?
So one of the things that I looked at during my campaign there was citywide surveillance, putting 2 cameras on each lamppost facing under the lamppost next to it. So we can have 2 angles to under each lamppost and kind of as surveillance of public areas only. We wouldn't have it overlapping any private property, but it was one of the things I looked at. They did it in a lot
the
of
the Dark Knight. They did it in the Dark Knight. Yes, yeah. You're right.
But London had it, and they said that when they put it in, it barely helped catch any crimes, but what they did see was a 60% reduction in crimes, partially to some of that being drivers, because people know that they're being watched, and that if they have to fill out an incident report and nothing's clear, then they can just go back and check the cameras and see what happened.
I hesitate to endorse at all a Big Brother type system, though that is an opinion, not one that I even remotely agree with. I accept it as a potential idea that I do not agree with. But so the other obvious solution is we can straight up redesign all our roads. infinite cost, infinite rabbit hole, and we're already doing this in a lot of our new neighborhoods. And that's a good system. I think we can both agree road design needs to change going forward. Obviously, for the existing neighborhoods, that's cost prohibitive, and it's just not going to happen. So for a neighborhood like, let's say, King Edward Park, who accepted these 40 kilometer an hour changes with an overwhelming, well, I say overwhelming, it was about 74% in the after survey said, yeah, well, we'll keep these. And I consider that overwhelming.
I would too.
Yeah. So in the case of King Edward Park, where you have this existing grid-based neighborhood and you have 76th Avenue, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with. It goes from 83rd or 82nd Street, the one that aligns with Bonnie Doon Mall, and it goes straight across the ravine. And if you follow it all the way through Ritchie, you can get to 99th Street. So it's this great shortcut right through the ravine, avoiding bridges, avoiding traffic lights on White Ave. And that was a big problem for residents of King Edward Park, was people shortcutting. And if you look at any ward under any councillor, they will say shortcutting through neighborhoods is a big complaint. So obviously King Edward Park overwhelmingly said, we like this 40 kilometer an hour change to reduce shortcutting. Short of doing this in the other neighborhoods to reduce shortcutting, what else can we do to reduce this sort of thing?
See, it's funny that you use that example, because when I was working at Casino Edmonton over on Argyle, one of the guys that I would drive home sometimes after work, actually, I would take 76th Ave because he lived like 99th Street and 78th Ave or so. So it just, it was the very most direct route. I mean, it was 3:30 in the morning, so traffic wasn't really a problem. I hope your kids aren't out playing at 3:30 in the morning. I see the shortcutting, but I would consider that more of a closer towards an arterial road than a residential road because of its direct route. So,
oh, you're in Hazeldine saying 76 is arterial. Fighting words over there.
Closer towards that. Yeah, it's not quite there yet. I mean, there would definitely need to be some different road design on that to support it being arterial. I mean, if that many people are using it, maybe we should look at, okay, well, how can we get them to use it safely? I mean, 40 kilometers an hour, if it's working, great. You know, if it's, if that system is working for them, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So yeah, in Millwoods, I don't really see too many areas like that where people would shortcut through. Like, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, you got 50th Street, 66th Street, 91st Street, and then you use 23rd Ave, 28th Ave, 34th Ave.
Yeah, and that is a byproduct of the South Side was built after Edmonton had become, you know, this car metropolis. It's an interesting thing to bring up because at this point, there was one other neighborhood that kept the 40s with a resounding yes, and that was Woodcroft, which at 78-ish% said, let's keep that. And the interesting thing about Woodcroft is that's the one right up by St. Albert Trail and the set of malls and Walmarts right around there. And it's a prime shortcutting route. There's a road that goes straight across and you can shortcut from St. Albert Trail to, I believe, 142nd Street. And of course, the residents said a resounding yes. And the other neighborhood that ended up keeping these was Otwell, which they had less of a resounding yes, but Otwell Road is a very effective shortcut prior to school zones, which at the time that they accept this, Edmonton didn't have school zones. So you could take Otwell Road and quickly shortcut past 75th Street, which in rush hour gets super backed up. And now if you look at the three neighborhoods that didn't actually accept this 40 kilometer an hour change, all of them are either bordering a river valley, or like in the case of, what's it called, Twin Brooks, it's actually surrounded entirely by rivers, it's or creeks, whatever, but there's nothing to shortcut because it's sort of an island. So I would posit that a lot of these 40 kilometer an hour changes, the EFCL is broadcasting this as we want to save our kids, but the actual residents of the neighborhood who are overwhelmingly accepting these changes are using it to prevent shortcutting. So if we frame the argument as this is a way to prevent shortcutting, it becomes less about framing the argument as preventing fatalities, which you said we can do on White Ave. We can prevent as many fatalities as we want. And instead, if we frame it as this is a way to prevent shortcutting, well, neighborhoods are the only place you can shortcut. So now we're in completely domain. We can't address this elsewhere and get more effective value for dollar because you can only prevent shortcutting in the neighborhoods. So assuming this was a way to prevent shortcutting and we didn't have the province's support, that $12 million to $15 million, how are you feeling about it now?
Well, if it's to prevent shortcutting, we can put it just on those roads that people are using to shortcut. I mean, just if they're shortcutting on like 76th Ave, for example, they're not using 75th Ave. So do we really need to put up a sign there? If we just put it on these roads that where people are doing it, the high risk roads for shortcutting, then the cost is drastically reduced.
The problem you'll find with that is diversion of shortcutting. So if we put it on 76th Street to prevent, and now no one put in the comment section that this doesn't work because of how cul-de-sacs work. If you put it on N plus 1 street to avoid shortcutting, then potentially people are diverting to the next street along, the one that is still 50 kilometers an hour because we didn't put up the sign. And now this next one along might even be a narrower, two-side parking, really residential street, at which point this one's 50, and the one beside it that is more of a thorough-put road is 40. And that doesn't make sense, and that will increase speeds, theoretically, in the rest of the neighborhood, which is why I think you'll find a lot of opposition, especially for residents, in that. So I don't know that we can save the money in this case. It feels to me like it's an all or nothing scenario if we're using this as a tool to prevent shortcutting.
If in the event where it's, look, we don't want people shortcutting through these neighborhoods. We want to try and direct traffic to arterial roads. Then, yeah, okay. Then it kind of makes sense. But even then, it's still a lot of money that we don't have. I mean, there was over 120 projects cut from the budget this last year, or for this year, that I think that we need to start catching up on the backlog of problems before we start trying to work on fixing new ones. I mean, yeah, it's a problem, but how much of a problem? Is there a bigger problem that we're dealing with? That
I would argue that it is a very huge problem. Shortcutting specifically is reducing neighborhood speeds. No, you're right. That's not a huge problem. That's not on the back burner, but you have high profile failures like Pleasant View with their catastrophic traffic calming measures that had huge backlash from residents and then huge counter backlash from residents and huge counter backlash. And it's become a snafu. So politically, yeah, shortcutting is right now a high profile issue. And we don't know how to solve it.
And on that too, about like just making the one road, I think the people that put enough thought into their daily route to try and save that extra couple of minutes by shortcutting through a residential know that for them to turn onto another residential road, to turn onto the next block, to turn back onto it later so that they can get back onto the main road eventually, I think that to be able to drive 10 kilometers faster, you're not going to save enough time. It's the same reason that when someone stopped at a train, the people that don't turn around and try to go and drive past where it's going, it feels faster, but it's not actually faster. So yes, people do it, but not nearly as much as the people that wait because they know that it's just going to be faster just to wait for the train.
Sort of another idea that I had, because I grew up in Sherwood Park, and the thing about Sherwood Park is we've got playground zones there. And Edmonton, I think it's got one, but for the most part, all of ours are playground areas. We don't have posted speed limits in playground zones. You can go 50 through a playground. And in fact, a couple years ago, the report that went through, I believe it was Councillor Katarina, had some pretty significant opposition to it, and we were directed to use fences and other mechanisms to keep speeds at 50 in playground zones and still keep kids safe. Another potential solution here is if we implemented playground zones in Edmonton, or at least in key zones, then specifically if you look at Hazeldine, we've got 96th Street is the only one that would be the shortcutty street, and we've got a school there, and we've got a playground along there. So if that was a playground zone, followed by a short patch of 50, followed by a school zone, for the majority of the daytime when people are playing or out and about, it'll be 30 kilometers an hour on that road. And that would significantly disincentivize shortcutters, because worse than going slow at a constant speed, it's fast brake. That's why people don't like traffic lights. So what about school zones? Because this isn't an every block thing. This is a couple signs. It would be comparable in cost to what we paid to implement our school zones.
See, on one hand, I agree with the playground zones. Because, you know, I remember going to parks all the time as a kid and seeing cars fly by. Like, we made sure that we played, like if we were playing with football or something, we played away from the park, you know, give ourselves lots of buffer room. But I think today there's not nearly as many kids playing outside at playgrounds as there used to be, you know, whether it's new technology or the high crime rates in Edmonton. Every playground I see, like if it's not during school, I don't usually see kids on there. Maybe that's just the neighborhoods I drive through. So like, I do like the idea of playgrounds, but if it's comparable cost, like, is there enough kids playing there to justify it?
I would argue, no, there's probably not. However, there are people there, people walking their dogs, people throwing frisbee in the park. You're right, I tend to not see as many children in parks. And when I say playgrounds, I'm not talking about specifically jungle gyms. Parks as well, green spaces, those all sort of count. But yeah, you're right, there are less kids there, and it's more adults there who generally know to look both ways before they cross the street. So you're right, playground zones as a zone, which is part of the reason I think council opposed it, doesn't make a lot of sense. It's not really protecting the people in the playground zones. I sort of see it as just another way to reduce speeds in neighborhoods without necessarily, because if we change the speed limit, we have to post a sign on every block, and that's really arduous on us and expensive.
If we were going to do it that way, we would have to say, okay, a school zone just automatically becomes a playground zone, but then we got to re-educate people. So we still have a cost, but we have a different cost.
Do we have to really re-educate people? It's in the driver's handbook. It's been there since 1950 or whatever.
Like I said, though, those who took their driver's test in 1940 may not know
that. They're pretty much dead by this point. They're the ones who are bad drivers for a very different reason at this point. I would say, because Edmonton's pretty unique. All the municipalities around us, Calgary has really arduous school zones and playground zones. Sherwood Park has playground zones everywhere. And in fact, most school zones are a subset of a playground zone in Sherwood Park. And I believe it's the same in St. Albert as well as in Fort Saskatchewan. So really, we're the holdout in Edmonton. And we were the holdout in school zones as well. So I don't really see the education as a huge issue. We'd have to have a couple City of Edmonton ad campaigns, but in terms of drivers, Alberta is the one who licenses drivers, and overwhelmingly Alberta does have school zones and playground zones. At this point, I see this as a cost argument from you. We sort of agree that it's a good-ish plan, but it's a cost thing from you.
Yeah, so the intent of what they're trying to do, I can 110% get behind that. I want safer neighborhoods. I mean, my kids, like, I live on a long stretch. It's about a 300-400 meter road before it just starts to curve, and then crosses a street, and then it goes for another maybe 500-600 meters. So there's lots of room there for people to get up to ludicrous speeds. But my kids don't play out front of my house. One, I'm not worried about the people that are driving 50 and paying attention. I'm worried about the people that are driving 80 or 90. Or there's EPS tweeted out people getting caught doing 100 in a school zone. You know, that's the people I'm worried about. And changing the sign isn't going to really affect that. And I'm also worried about people that are on their phones, which really boggles my mind, because technology has come so far. You can do virtually everything that you need to hands-free. And you know, like, I have texted and driven before this whole distracted driving came into effect, and it was much easier on phones with T9 than it is on phones with touchscreen. You know, because then you don't even have to look at your phone. Now you actually have to look.
It's really interesting. I don't know. Are you a fan of The West Wing?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, if you were, there's a weekly podcast called The West Wing Weekly, which is Joshua Molina goes week by week doing The West Wing. And episode 2 was the last one. And it's just hilarious because you see this character, Mandy, who back in the 90s was just careening with this big, bulky cell phone to her head while breaking a bunch of traffic laws. And watching it, you get really uncomfortable. You're like, what is she doing? You need to have your hands free while you're driving. But it was perfectly legal back then. It was acceptable. And it sort of blows your mind that some of these things, you're right, it's a re-education thing on some of those specific cases. So overall, if this motion was brought forward and you were speaking at city council, you'd still pretty well be a solid speaking against right now?
I think so, yeah.
Okay, and I can see your perspectives. I'm interested in hearing a lot of the viewers' perspectives. So if you have any comments about this, feel free to comment in the section or on the website or on Reddit or wherever you feel like talking about this. But as a palate cleanser, I've got a couple games for us. I don't know if you ever listened to Comedy Bang Bang, but it's one of my favorite podcasts, and they've got a fun game called What Am I Thinking? Now, how this game is played is we'll both independently think of a word in our head, a word, phrase, anything, just sort of a concept, and then we'll both count 3, 2, 1 and say the word, and then we'll look at those two words. We'll try and figure out what's between those two words. What's the compromise word? What's the middle ground? And say 3, 2, 1 and say that word. And the goal is to say 3, 2, 1 and then say the same word by splitting the difference.
Okay.
You got it?
Yep. Okay. I think so.
So choose a word, lock it in your head.
Okay.
Okay. Ready? Yeah. Say it with me. Okay. Three, two, one. Fish. Chair. Okay. Fish and chair. All right. So what do fish and chair have in common? Just think about that a little bit, and when you're ready, you ready? You ready?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Three, two, one. Anemone.
Fish tank.
Okay. Fish tank and anemone. Okay. All right.
Oh, what do they have in common? Not how do we join the two?
Well, I mean, you could. Both of those work. All right. So we've got fish tank and anemone. All right. You got a word? All right, we gotta go fast. All right, let's go faster. You lose. Ready? Three, two, one. Nemo. Desk. All right, desk and Nemo. Okay, we're losing it a little bit. All right, ready? Three, two, one.
Clown.
Clown and orange. Okay. Ready?
Three, two, one.
Clownfish. Okay. Rainbow clownfish. All right, ready?
Okay.
I think we've got one. Three, two, one.
Rainbow fish. Pretty close.
Yeah, we'll call it. A rainbow trout is a rainbow fish. All right, that's good. Jason, do you have anything else to say, anything to plug? You came all the way out here.
Well, one of the things that I didn't mention was City of Winnipeg was actually looking at doing the same thing because there are several other cities across Canada that have reduced their speed limits. And the administration from Winnipeg is recommending against it, and they're actually using Edmonton as an example where the test wasn't successful. They didn't say it straight up failed. They just said it wasn't successful. So, I mean, I think that's something to consider. But on the same note, too, what works in another city does not necessarily mean that it'll work in every city. All right. So you got to look at what the demographics of that city, what problems are they facing? So because it I'm sure that it has worked in other cities, but I don't necessarily see that as it will work for us. But I mentioned earlier with the citywide surveillance in London, like it did work for them. It doesn't necessarily mean that it will work for us, but we should take a look at how we can make it work for us.
And that's a really interesting point that you brought up, because like I said, there were the three that accepted. And in the case of King Edward Park, it's actually working really well, and the residents are very happy about it in the general case. And then there were other neighborhoods like Twin Brooks where it straight up didn't make sense, and the residents overwhelmingly voted against it. And currently, the city policy for this is if 67% of a neighborhood, either by some demonstrable means, so maybe through their community league, maybe through surveys, if 67% of a community comes forward and says, we want to go 40 kilometers an hour, the city policy is to do it. Really, if the EFCL has such this widespread concern that they want 40 kilometers an hour all across the city, the communities that really want it, they can come forward individually and get it for themselves. And if all of them do it, then we will have 40 kilometers an hour citywide except where it doesn't make sense. So I agree that's probably a pretty good solution going forward.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, if there are certain areas that do dictate a need for it, then yeah, absolutely we can do that. Like there was one of the neighborhoods that I looked at there, they were 3 years without any severe traffic incidents prior to the traffic change. I don't remember which one it was off the top of my head, but, and then there was another one that at the start of the data had 10 incidents in it. So maybe something like that, that neighborhood could use it because there's kind of enough incidents there that we can justify the cost of it. But to blanket it everywhere, I don't think is a great idea.
Thanks for coming in, Jason. It was a pleasure talking to you again. And where can people see more from you? If they really like what they hear, are you on Twitter? Do you like to post there?
Yeah, so I'm on Twitter at Jason Bale. I have a Facebook page. It's just Jason Bale for City Council. And my email, jasonbale@hotmail.com.
Okay, well, thanks for coming in. It was a pleasure talking to you and hope to talk to you again soon.
Sounds good. Thanks, Troy.
If you're interested in checking out show notes for this episode, head on over to basketofyeggs.com/7. There you can find links to everything we talked about. And while you're there, subscribe to our newsletter. We'll send you an email blast every time we have a new episode out so you never miss one of these great Basket of Yeggs. Until next time, I'm Troy Pavlik, and I'll see you at the Talisdome.